We're talking about brutal working conditions and labor atrocities in the palm oil industry and the pervasiveness of palm oil in the products we use every day. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. The Associated Press, it did a massive investigation last year, visiting more than 24 plantations in Indonesia and Malaysia and interviewing over 130 workers. What do you want to know about conditions in palm oil fields and the connection to big banks and the products you buy? Have you intentionally tried to avoid products that use palm oil? How did that go? It's 800-642-1234. Margie Mason is an investigative reporter for the Associated Press. She and colleague Robin McDowell won an award from UW-Madison Center for Journalism Ethics for their investigative series on palm oil labor abuses. Margie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Good morning. You probably get this a lot, but I felt so conflicted reaching for the Dove soap this morning. Can you give us... Yeah, can you give us a sense of the range of products that palm oil is in?
Palm oil is so ubiquitous. It's in so many different things. It's in everything, as you mentioned, from Dove soap to Hershey's and Nestle's chocolate. It's in Girl Scout cookies. It's in paint. It's in explosives. It is an extremely versatile oil, vegetable oil, and it largely comes from two countries, Indonesia and Malaysia. And even though it touches your life in the donuts you're eating this morning or in your coffee creamer, most people, you know, a lot of people haven't heard of it.
It can be disguised on labels, I understand. What are some of the other names it goes by in product ingredient lists?
You know, you can find, there's a lot of very scientific sounding names that you would have to look. We've got a whole list of names that are extremely long that you could find it in. But also there's, you know, sometimes you can see it'll say palmic acid or some form of the word palm. And that's a clue. But it doesn't always mean it's palm oil. It could be, you know, coconut oil or something else like that. But normally, if it says palm, there's a good chance it's in there. But oftentimes, again, if you're looking at the back of your shampoo bottle, you'll see all this gobbledygook and these long names that you can't even pronounce. And there's a chance it might be in there as well.
So Southeast Asia, Malaysia, and Indonesia, these countries start to really ramp up commercial production of palm oil in the 60s and the 70s. What did palm oil replace? What was going on then?
Well, at that time, these countries were really trying to find, in their case, a golden crop. And so it was really important to them. They latched onto palm oil and found that it was very lucrative. And at the same time, you know, there were a need for different types of fuels. So it's now being used in Europe and elsewhere as a biofuel. And here in the United States, you know, and elsewhere as well, trans fats, there was a ban. We all remember the trans fats ban to try to eliminate that from our diets. And so palm oil just kind of was the nice, easy thing that was cheap and abundant to substitute in for that. So that's what we saw happening in the U.S. And most of us didn't even know what happened here.
Yeah, and I didn't even realize that Malaysia's government, way back in the 50s, they created FELDA, the Federal Land Development Authority, with this intent of, you know, giving jobs to the rural poor in the palm oil industry. And this grew to become the world's largest state-run palm oil agency. What is the role of FELDA in the palm oil industry?
Right. So FELDA is, as you mentioned, a big one. And it was set up, you know, there were lands set aside, and it's still run. It has a commercial arm as well, known as FGV Holdings. And basically today, it is still one of the major players. And as we found in our reporting, there are problems there with labor abuses. We found a lot of different issues, including a man who, you know, was being forced to sleep in the jungle because his passport had been taken from him and then expired. And he was an Indonesian man there, you know, essentially there illegally because his paperwork wasn't, you know, up to date. And he ended up escaping. But yes, Felda is a major player, and as is, you know, FGB Holdings.
We are learning about human rights abuses in the production of palm oil, an ingredient found in about half the products on supermarket shelves, most cosmetic brands. Margie Mason is the investigative reporter at the Associated Press, and you can join in. Have you tried to avoid products that use palm oil? Has that been difficult? What do you want to know about the industry? 800-642-1234. Bill is joining us from Milwaukee with a question. Hi, Bill.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm glad you're talking about this. This is not the first time that I have heard about the exploitation of women and children and all kinds of ancillary horrors as a result of the palm oil industry. What I would not come from a protest generation. I remember when we went after Nestle for a while when I was in college because we didn't like the way they were treating people in Central America. Mm-hmm. I want to know who are the major purveyors of palm oil in the United States, who are their products, and we the people should stop buying them. It's just that simple. We as consumers have great power in this world, and if we decide to turn somebody off, they will go off.
Bill,
if we eliminate them, it will eliminate the problem.
Yeah, Bill, thank you for that. Do consumers have leverage here up against these multinational companies, Margie?
Well, I think that's a very good question, and it's one that I get asked a lot. Unfortunately, you know, palm oil is so, it's found in so many different products, and we like to say that it is too big to fail at this point. You know, he mentioned Nestle. So Nestle uses palm oil, but so does PepsiCo and Procter & Gamble and Unilever. You know, you can basically pick out any major, you know, huge food or cosmetics company in the world, and, you know, they're probably using some form of palm oil. So at this point, you know, it's found in so many different places. It's difficult to just say, I'm not going to use this or I'm going to give it up. It's very hard to boycott.
When you look at the abuses, the labor abuses, you talked with more than 130 current and former workers. What did they tell you? What stories stay with you?
You know, I think one of the things that stays with me is that we talked to all of these workers across vast stretches of Indonesia and Malaysia. And in doing so, we basically heard the same stories over and over again. You know, there's a lot of issues with women not getting paid the same as men and not being given full-time positions, basically being on kind of a day, you know, worker or piecemeal type of situation. Oftentimes, too, the quotas are so high. They're given these daily quotas that they can't reach the quota. So the man will have the job, but he'll end up having to bring his wife and in some cases his children to the fields to help as well. And they work for free so that he can meet his quota. So this is the type of thing that we heard over and over and over again. Again, the passports being taken, you know, people feeling trapped, and in some cases, people being outright enslaved and forced to stay and work on a plantation for no money under threat of violence.
We're talking with Associated Press investigative journalist Margie Mason, who uncovered, as she said, child labor, horrific working conditions on palm oil plantations in Malaysia and Indonesia. It's documented in her on-the-ground reporting. Do you think it's up to companies or consumers to stand up for fair labor practices? How can the two work together? Have you seen these working conditions firsthand? What do you want to know about the inner workings of the palm oil industry? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Margie Mason on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the palm oil industry produced from the fruits of palm trees and conditions for workers on plantations in Indonesia and Malaysia, the world's largest producers of palm oil and found in so many products we're learning we use in our life. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. An Associated Press investigation last year uncovered palm oil companies operating in tropical Southeast Asia exploit children, along with severe labor atrocities like forced labor trafficking and slavery. What products have you taken a stand against because of deplorable labor practices? Be part of this, 800-642-1234. The Associated Press investigative journalist behind this work, Margie Mason, is with us for 10 more minutes. Tim is joining us from New Berlin, going to the Girl Scout cookies reference. Tim, go ahead.
Yes. Oh, it sounds like you've already heard about this, but about 3 or 4 years ago on one of those feel-good stories at the end of the network news, they talked about these two Girl Scouts who brought attention to the higher-ups in the Girl Scouts about palm oil being in the cookies, and these girls were recognized and given credit, and I think some kind of an award, for pointing out this abuse. And it certainly sounded like Girl Scout cookies were going to stop using palm oil, but we bought recently Girl Scout cookies, and sure enough, it's right back in there. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you knew, it sounds like you know something about this. What do you know about that, please?
Tim, thanks. Margie.
You're right, Tim. There were a couple of girls who worked on this issue, and Girl Scouts came out and they made pledges and they said they were going to move, or their bakers were going to move to a sustainable palm oil, which is a palm oil that's basically, it checks a lot of boxes that this roundtable on sustainable palm oil, which is this you know, body that people are members of. The Girl Scouts moved to this type of regulated or more sustainable palm oil. But the problem is that with labor abuses, what we found is that on these plantations that had this seal of approval from the RSPO, there were still labor abuses happening. And so we actually found a little girl in Tennessee who was interested in this issue as well and looking at the sustainability of it. And she was looking mainly at the environment. And when we started telling her about the labor issues, she became extremely interested in that as well, especially with children. We found child labor directly connected to the supply chain of Girl Scout cookies. Mm. So she's now taken this up and has been really, trying to force change within the organization. And there's a lot of other girls who have joined forces with her.
Can you look to other industries that have worked to end inhumane labor practices? I mean, thinking of the production of coffee or cacao for chocolate, or even the Forestry Stewardship Council. I mean, is there a pathway here of reform?
You know, I think, again, the palm oil industry, because it is so big, it's going to take a lot of work to try to make change. There are millions of people working in this industry. It is extremely labor intensive. And so I think, there is certainly, there's been a lot of work done with, as you mentioned, cocoa and some other, commodities. But with palm oil being, again, so large and I think entrenched, this has been going on for generations now. We literally found people that were 4 or 5 generations on one plantation. So it's going to take a lot of change, and it's going to take a lot of will, both, for the companies who are buying this product, this palm oil, but also for the governments who are involved and the banks that are financing it.
And we're going to get to the banks in a moment. We're talking with Margie Mason from the Associated Press, and she won an award from UW-Madison for an investigative series on palm oil labor abuses. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Margie, you say that this industry is too big to fail, and it reminds me of the big banks, right? Who is financing these plantations?
Well, what we found is we looked at different banks, major banks and financial institutions, everyone from, you know, HSBC to Bank of America, Citibank, the Vanguard Group. And, you know, what we found is that they all are in some ways financing, or the money is either going, you know, in some cases directly to palm oil companies, or it's being routed through, you know, one of the biggest banks in Southeast Asia, Maybank. And they're, you know, one of the biggest financers of the palm oil industry. So, you know, we looked at that and, you know, wanted to call that out because, you know, the banks also have, you know, a lot of them have, you know, a responsibility, and they make it very clear that they don't want slavery or child labor or anything connected with, you know, the projects that they're or funding. So in that particular, you know, case, we looked at this and we found pretty much all roads were leading from the major banks in some way to the palm oil industry.
Would the banks talk to you? Did they have a position to tell you?
A lot of the banks basically just came back and pointed to whatever their policy is on, you know, child labor, forced labor, slavery. And most of them do have, you know, most of them do have some kind of policy in place. But again, the question is, you know, if you have a policy, is it, you know, is this policy actually working, or is it just there, you know, for window dressing? Because again, we put a lot of money, including, you know, from, you know, teachers' pensions and things, was actually ending up in the palm oil industry.
Margie, this is a bit of a reporter's notebook question, I suppose, but how did you talk with the workers? I mean, you mentioned the worker, you know, living on the jungle floor, sleeping in the jungle. But how did you come in contact with these workers?
Well, I think there were a couple of different ways. We approached people sometimes on plantations if it was safe for us to go in and meet with them. But oftentimes, you know, we had to be very careful, and we did not reveal any of the, you know, identities for the workers in our stories to protect them. And so we would have people meet us oftentimes outside, sometimes, you know, late at night. And we would meet in coffee shops or hotels or, you know, anywhere we could to kind of, you know, get as easy for them and as safe for them.
How did you earn their trust? How did you, you know, get them to talk with you and that you would be able to, they would be able to trust you with their stories because their life is in danger?
Right. I mean, you know, it took time, and I think really it was more about building trust with the sources and people that they trusted. You know, once we kind of, you know, made clear what we were doing and the purpose of what we were doing, and we tried to, you know, ensure everyone that we would do our absolute best to, you know, keep anybody's identity from being known so that, you know, no one would lose their jobs or, you know, have other things possibly happen, like being deported, or in some cases, even we worried about violence. You know, that was the main way. So this type of reporting takes a lot of time. This was over 2 years of reporting, and it really came down to, you know, source building and just being in the field and really going back over and over and over again, because we just didn't have the data. It wasn't like someone handed us a stack of papers and said, hey, here are these secret documents, write about this. We really had to do this from the ground, from scratch.
Margie, trace for us, how did these workers get trapped in this industry in the first place?
I'm sorry, you just broke up. I didn't catch that.
How did these workers get trapped in this palm oil industry to begin with? How did their lives, you know, lead to this?
Well, you know, it all stems from poverty. Robin and and I spent many years living in Southeast Asia. And, you know, these are people who are from very poor places in Indonesia, in Myanmar, in Cambodia. And so they're looking for opportunity. Bangladesh, you know, they want to better their lives. They want to better their families. And so, you know, the industry, especially in Malaysia, there's a real shortage of workers. And, you know, they can't find people within the country to do the jobs. So people from outside come in. And often they come in under terms that they think they're getting. And it's turns out not to be the case. And they end up being stuck and exploited and abused. And this happens not just in palm oil, but in many industries, unfortunately.
Margie, thank you for your reporting and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Margie Mason is an investigative reporter with the Associated Press. We have a link to her series on palm oil labor abuses. It's at WPR.org/mornings. Ahead this hour, we explore the debate over vaccine passports. Should proof of vaccination be required for certain types of travel or to get into large gatherings? Or what about the office? 800-642-1234. News update is next on the Ideas Network.